Good morning. It's good to be with you this morning. As I was sitting up front here, I was feeling a little down. I like to bring messages that bring joy. And when we got to singing about Jesus, I got excited. My message about media is not quite that kind of a joyful, glorious thing. But it is Jesus that makes us be able to stand up and fight against these things. And he gives us the promises, he gives us the application, he gives us what we need to fight these things. And we say fight these things, but often they're good things. You know, I don't know how many of you, and just up front here, I'll say about this message. There are some of you that will say, and I heard this last time, I had no idea what you were talking about. All I can say is say praise the Lord. If you don't know what I'm talking about today, praise the Lord, because that means it's really not affecting you all that much, and that's a good thing. That means you're avoiding some things that the rest of us are fighting with. It's one of the things that, it's probably one of the things that's nearest and deepest to my heart because I fight with it. I struggle with it. It's probably been a 10-year struggle with me. And it's something that I have to fight every day is this addiction to media. And so it's near and dear to me. It's heavy on my heart because I know it's a battle. And I know it's a battle for some of you. And there's some tools that I've learned. There's some failures that I've had that I might share with you today. Just all in order to help you know how to work with this. But God really gives us what we need. If we take what he has given us and apply it, it really helps a lot. But it's hard to do that sometimes, and we're going to look at some of those things. So if you don't understand, and there's going to be some young people here that go, you're way behind already. You're way behind. Media moves. The stuff that we're looking at moves so fast. And that's part of the reason that we're looking at our whole media section is that it does change. It does. It's probably one of the things that changes the fast of anything that we talk about in our covenant is media, because there's always new kinds of media. There's new things that are coming out. And so first thing I want to look at this morning is how do we evaluate the media that we take in? What are the parameters? What do we use? And we can't take the world's standards, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. We do that, and I feel like we've done that to our detriment in the whole side of movies, TV series. We've taken the culture's ratings and used those for ourselves, and I don't think that works very well if we look at it. We're going to look at that just a little bit. We're going to look at several different things today. The biggest thing we're going to look at is social media. Media covers lots of things. There's a huge list, and we were talking about this the other evening in our leadership team meeting, and even words have changed. If you say videos, we talked about videos or movies. It means different things to different people, so it moves, it changes as time goes on, and so we need to look at, but God's principles don't change, and that's what we want to look at this morning. I'm going to look at several verses, ten verses that we can use to evaluate what we absorb in media, whether that is through our phone, and let's talk about our phone. Our phone really is just, it's not a phone anymore. It's a device that lets us make phone calls. It's probably the smallest thing that it does, but we still call it a phone. I don't know why we call it a phone. Should be a different name for it, because really that's just a small part of what most of us do on the device that we carry in our pockets. But first of all, first verse I want to look at that we want to use verses, and I was thinking about these are some of these verses I think we should put in front of our devices. I've thought about taking some of these verses and put it on as a screensaver on my phone so that every time I open it, I look at these verses and I see these verses and they're in the front of my mind. And I was going to talk to my, I haven't talked to my wife yet, but there's a verse that I would like to put on top of our, we call it a TV, but it's what it is, the big screen downstairs that we put on top of that on the outside. There's a verse that I want to get printed out and put right above that, and we'll get to that here in just a little bit. But here's some of the verses that I think that we can use to evaluate the media that we absorb. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of the evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it. Pass and pass on. Do we do that? How often, do we put ourselves into the way of temptation because of the media that we watch? Watch and pray lest you enter into temptation. The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak. And if you have a battle with media, you know this is very strong. The flesh, The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh, too many times, is weak. So we need to understand that about ourselves. And what are we doing about those things? Flee also youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. And what really stuck out to me with this is, and something hit me, and I think this is probably where I need to, something hit me, it didn't hit me, this hit me months ago, and I just haven't done it, but I think we need to. The biggest thing we talk about when we talk about pornography is that when you struggle with it, you need to tell somebody, and you need to have somebody follow along with you. You need to don't try to beat it on your own. And I think, actually, most sins are that way. As we look at this verse, 22 of 2 Timothy 2, it says, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace. And I think here's two key words, with those. That word really stuck out to me as I was studying that this week. With those who call on the Lord out of your pure heart. We're not supposed to necessarily flee those youthful. I think we can't do it by ourselves. But to pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace is not something that we do just on our own. But we have a group of people that we do it with. And that really stuck out to me. And I think that's probably the part that I've struggled with the most in this, in my addiction with the social media, is that I've not done enough to be accountable. Like, to share it with somebody, say, get a partner and say, look, man, I need help with this. I want to be accountable to you. I think that is a key thing. And with those, it just, again, gave me a sense of peace to know that we're not running this race alone. God didn't design us to run the race of being a Christian all by ourselves, but to do it with those who, and it, specifically, he gives us who we're supposed to do it with. With those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. With those who want to serve and follow him. And so that's something that we can do. Something that's available to us as we try to handle the media that we get in contact with. 1 Corinthians 6:12, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. And I think social media comes in very strongly here. It can be, I don't know how many about you guys, but half the things that I do fix, I love to fix things. I could not fix it without YouTube. I love YouTube. It does such a wonderful thing. But then I'm like, Ryan, I can figure out how to change the alternator. I look up the video how to change the alternator, but then we get to the video about training drafts like Ryan shared with us the other week. You know, how do we start with a good, you know, I need to do this. I want to fix this, and I can save a lot of time if I can just watch somebody show me how to do it. But then we get on these little bunny trails, and the next thing we know, it's several hours later. Too often it can happen that way. So all things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. So sometimes these things are good. YouTube's good for us sometimes, but it's not always helpful. But I will not be brought under the power of any. And we're going to look at that. We're going to look at the addiction side of some of this. Some of this, I guess, that's really been opened my eyes and I want to share with you is that I didn't realize it's just like a drug. It does the same thing to your body that a drug does, the social media part of it, the way that it's set up. And why that's why it's sometimes so difficult to fight this. 1 Corinthians 10:31, therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all for the glory of God. I think that's one of those verses that we could put up that could be on our screens. Therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all for the glory of God. Verse 3 here is the one that I would like to put above our big screen. Psalm 101, verse 2 and verse 3. I will behave wisely in a perfect way. Oh, when will you come to me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will set nothing wicked before my eyes. I think that is one of the great things that we can use to evaluate the media that we look at, that we absorb. Philippians 4:8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things, the things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me. These do, and the God of peace will be with you. Again, an excellent set of verses that we can use to evaluate the media that we look at. And again, I think I say this every message, but you know, we're no different. Man has not changed. Our heart has not changed. We just have different things to sin with. We may just have it a little more, a little easier. Tertullian, and this, I've got two different concepts up here, and these can happen. Actually, I'll read them, and then I'll talk about them, because you're going to read them anyway. Tertullian, 160 to 240 A.D., how can it be right to look at things that are wrong to do? And I really want you to think about this, because this really hit me. How can it be right to look at things that are wrong to do? How can those things which defile a man when they go out of the mouth not defile him when they're when going in through his eyes and ears? Think about that. Think about that, about the media that we absorb. How can it be right to look at things that are wrong to do? How can those things which defile a man when they go out of the mouth not defile him when going in through his eyes and ears? And then we have the opposite of that down at the bottom. This is read this in an article of our youth pastor, modern day. He says, I don't worry about what I watch or listen to as long as my heart is right. Think about it. It's two different ways of looking at things, isn't it? And I think, in all honesty, you could switch these around. There was probably people back in 160 AD that had the exact same idea that this young youth pastor is saying today. And there are people today that have, you know, would have the same idea that Tertullian had there. But I had to think about it. How do we, the big thing that hit me that I was, as I was processing this, is how do we justify the things that we watch? How do people justify the things that they watch? And I think quite often it is the last one up there on the screen. I don't worry about what I watch or listen to as long as my heart is right. I don't think that's a good choice. I don't think that's a good attitude to have, to be all in honest, but I believe it's one that we often use, even though we would never say it out loud. Never would say it out loud. I think it is quite often what we use to justify the things that we watch. So now we're going to talk about a few of the things that about social media. Let me see, where do I want to go? Nope, not yet. Okay, I want to talk about phones just a little bit. And actually the phone part of it, like the telephone part of it. How many of you leave the house without this? Anybody? Intentionally. Well, let's put it that way. I leave it sometimes unintentionally. How does it make you feel when you leave the house and you forgot your phone? When you're about a mile down the road and you realize, ugh, I forgot my phone. How does it make you feel? I don't know. For me, I go, oh, man, I start thinking about all the things that could go wrong that I need my phone for. Well, what if something happens at home and they can't get a hold of me? What if I get a flat tire? What if? But after about 2-3 miles down the road, I've kind of, well, it's going to be what it's going to be. It's actually kind of a relief. You know, for however long I'm going to be gone now, it's going to be my time. Nobody can get a hold of me. It kind of feels kind of good. And what I want to bring out here is, what is our security? Because I think quite often this thing has become a security for me. It is my security blanket, so that if anything goes wrong, I can call for help rather than relying on the Lord. Not saying that we should just don't take it with us, but what are we using as our security blanket? And can we put it away? Can you go a whole day without checking your phone? And this goes back almost into the social media part of it, too. We'll look at that there, too. Can you go a whole day without checking your phone? It is hard for me. I don't know about you, but it's hard for me. And I had to talk about the fear thing. Fear is used, and thinking about fear, there's two incidents in my life that really stuck out to me. And one of them just happened 2 weeks ago. There was a big thing that we called the election. What did both sides use to try to get you to vote for them? Like, they tried to have policy, but the biggest thing that we saw is they tried to make you scared of what's going to happen if you vote, if the other person gets it. Both sides used it. Fear is a huge motivator. And it was, they used it. They tried it. They did a good job trying to motivate people by fear. The other one that drives by, that goes by fear, is the insurance company. I remember several years ago, I sat down with the insurance company going over our policy, and they said, well, you know, this could happen. For $25, you can be covered. It's amazing how many things could happen that I never thought about. But man, once they said it, I'm like, well, yeah, you know, I should. And finally, when you get down to the bottom number, this big number, and you go, you know what? This is not, the chances of most of these things happening are pretty nil. We're just going to pass on those. But the way they do it is they bring up the fear factor. Like, what happens? And I think that's what too often we use our phones for. We're scared and we don't want to depend on the Lord maybe, or we're just scared of let fear rule our lives. And so I want to just bring that out. I'm not going to talk very much about phones themselves, because telephones themselves, if you use it just for a phone, you're usually pretty safe. But we do want to talk about social media a little bit. Actually, we're going to not go there, because you're going to read it while I'm talking about some other things. So what I want to talk about this morning, the biggest thing that I want to make people aware of is that the industry hides a lot of things. They don't tell us that it's dangerous necessarily, but they don't tell us it's safe either. If you really look at it, they don't give us, but it is fairly dangerous. And what stuck out to me as I was studying this is the people that worked in these, not the people that own the companies, like Facebook or Twitter or those. The people that own the companies aren't saying this, but the people that designed it, the developers in the back, are saying this is very dangerous. And there's a lot of them that are not letting their children have anything to do with social media until they're at least 18. And so I just want to bring out some of that and some of the dangers that are happening there that we're not made aware of. So I'm going to be reading a fair amount of things for the next little bit here. So a few things. One of these, and if you want notes on these, if you don't want to know where I got it, I do have all the references if you want to know where I got some of this information. So the Surgeon General of the U.S. issued an oft-cited warning in May of 2023 that there is growing evidence that social media use is associated with harm to young people's mental health. But the warning came with a qualifier. There is not enough evidence to say definitively whether social media is safe. So there's really not enough. We don't know enough about this yet. So it's like inventing a new drug and saying, here, just use it. Once we find out if it's good for you or not, then we'll, but we're going to make a lot of money while you use it. Here, just use it, especially for young people. And one of the things they said is that we don't have enough information to know if it's harming young people. And the people that have the information are the social media companies. And they're not going to give it up. Why would they give it up? It's like the person that's selling the drug is the guy that knows that it has an issue, that there's side effects that are not good, but they're not going to say. And we see, if you watch any kinds of shows, that's a big deal with the pharmacies. You know, they let out a big drug. They release a big drug, but they hide the fact that there's 2% of the people will die from a heart attack if they use it. It's a big deal. And that's what's happening with social media. There's a lot of things that are concerns that are out there. There's a lot of things that they think about, but the big companies are hiding the information. They're not giving it out. This is about a tech journalist and somebody that works in the tech industry. When Silicon Valley tech journalist and entrepreneur Sarah Lacey became a mother, she invited a couple of fellow new parents to her San Francisco home. I have a huge TV in my living room, and I think we had a baseball game on in the background. We weren't even watching it or interacting with it, she recalls, but then something curious happened. One dad, another figure in the tech industry, was sitting on the couch holding his baby, which began looking around the room. And its mother obscured its view of the big screen, saying, "No, you're not going to see television at all until you're 3 years old." What you'll see is that there's more and more of this media people that are in the, like I said, like the designers, the engineers that understand what this does to the minds of young people, of little children, are saying, no, we don't want it. This kind of behavior is becoming increasingly common as many of the tech world's leading lights, whose products have been used by millions of children the world over, are now intent on curbing their own offspring's screen time. So basically, they're curbing their own children's screen time. Not content with banning their children's devices, they are now legally stipulating the staff to do the same. A report last weekend documented the rise in nanny contracts requiring that Silicon Valley kids not only be kept away from their own screens, but that those tasked with looking after them don't use their phones in front of the children either. So if that's, and another thing that's a big deal is there's a school there in Silicon Valley, private school, that's very popular because it bans all devices from school. They're not allowed. And these tech parents are saying, we are seeing what the damage it does to children. They can't think as well. They can't reason as well. There's all kinds of things, and we'll look at some of those here in just a little bit too. So we don't want our kids to have that. And there's another guy, Justin Rosenstein, had tweaked his, and this is for adults too. I think this is for all of us. And there's some things that we're going to talk about here that we can do as adults for ourselves and for our children. Justin Rosenstein had tweaked in his laptop operating system to block Reddit, banned himself from Snapchat, which he compares to heroin, and imposed limits on his use of Facebook. But even that wasn't enough. In August, the 34-year-old tech executive took a more radical step to restrict his use of social media and other addictive technologies. Rosenstein purchased a new iPhone and instructed his assistant to set up a parental control feature to prevent him from downloading any apps. Now, for most of us, that's going to be our wives. Some of you might have an assistant, but most of us don't. Most of us, it's going to be our wife that can do that for us. He was particularly aware of the allure of Facebook likes, which he describes as bright dings of pseudo-pleasure that can be as hollow as they are seductive. And Rosenstein should know he was the Facebook engineer who created the like button in the first place. So these guys they're understanding that what they designed, and often, and I don't know if I brought this out last time, it was not intentional. The addictive nature was not necessarily intentional. But, of course, when you design something, you want people to look at it, you see what works. And actually, the like button, that it works so well, was an accident. It was an accident. He designed it. I think it was called the awesome button. I almost remember way back when, initially it was called the awesome button. And then they changed it to the like button, changed the color of it, did different things. Do all kinds of things. I think we talked about that a little bit last time, that they do to make it more attractive, more addictive. But we see more and more of the people that designed it understanding all of a sudden what they designed. They designed a beast that they didn't really intentionally design, but that they don't want their children to have any part of it. This Rosenstein, he said this also, there is a growing concern that as well as addicting users, technology is contributing towards so-called continuous partial attention, severely limiting people's ability to focus and possibly lowering IQ. One recent study showed that the mere presence of a smartphone damages cognitive capacity or the ability to think, even when the device is turned off. He said, everyone is distracted. And the sad part of that is it's true. It was what really made me mad and irritated was that it was true while I was trying to study for this message. And I'm thinking, I wonder if there's some good YouTube videos to watch. I wonder, you get distracted. I'm like, I wish it wouldn't be that way, but it is. So some of this, I know I understand it firsthand. I mean, I get it. Another guy, Joe Galisi, says this, I've built a career in social media, and he has a social media company. He says, I've built a career in social media, and I love it, but it's no place for kids to roam free. And he will not let his children who have social media accounts until they're 16. And then it's limited. And that's unusual. And what I'm hearing from all of the reading of these articles is Like this guy's kids, they go to school, they're the only ones. And that's what we hear from our children. We'll hear from our children all the time is, but dad, so-and-so has a phone, so-and-so has Snapchat, so-and-so, and we'll hear that all the time. Going against the grain, it will be going against the grain to not let our children have social media accounts. So according to addiction expert Dr. Anna Limbrook, our smartphones are making us dopamine junkies. With each swipe, like, and tweet, feeding our habit. So the question here is, well, part of it is, how do we beat our digital dependency? And one of the things that she would say is that you need to take your phone and lock it away for 24 hours. Just put it away for 24 hours to try to beat that addiction. That's hard to do. This Jamie Waters was interviewing this guy, and I'm going to be reading some of that for you. But he said, he admitted to her that he had a problem with his phone. This is what she said. She wants me to abstain from using it for at least 24 hours by locking it in a drawer and going out. The first 12 hours will be filled with anxiety and FOMO, or fear of missing out. But as time unfolds, I'll experience a sense of real freedom. We'll gain insight into my relationship with my digital companion, and we'll resolve to get back to using it a little differently, she says, speaking with a smooth, soothing yet firm tone. She calls the smartphone the modern-day hypodermic needle. We turn to it for our quick hits, seeking attention, validation, and distraction with each swipe, like, and tweet. And I think she hit something there. As I was studying about this, somebody had asked me after my last message, is there a heart issue here that we need to address? And I think she's not a Christian, but I think she hit something. I think she hit what people are seeking, and that is attention, validation, and a distraction. I'm going to talk about a little bit about those at the end. But that is some of the things I think that the smartphone does for us. Is it gives us attention, gives us validation, gives us distraction. And then when all of a sudden you don't get it from a smartphone, there's things that happen. Suicide rates have gone up for young children because all of a sudden maybe something is shared about them and they get tons of dislikes and their whole life is about being liked and causes lots of hurt. She says this also, since the turn of the millennium or in the 2000s, behavioral as opposed to substance addictions have soared. Every spare second is an opportunity to be stimulated, whether by entering the TikTok vortex, scrolling Instagram, swiping through Tinder, binging on porn, online gambling, or e-shopping. All those things that you can do right from at home so easily. I'm going to skip a few things here for sake of time. When we binge on pleasurable things, homeostasis means our brains compensate by bringing us lower and lower and lower. So one of the things you brought out over that I skipped over, probably shouldn't have skipped over it, is that our brains do an equal, like they try to level each other out. So if we have a really high, they'll bring us low to try to keep us, our brain will do that to try to keep us level, even keel. And she says if we keep on binging on the pleasurable things, we're constantly on a high, our brain tries to bring us down from that, and it goes lower and lower and lower. Each time the thing becomes less enjoyable, but eventually become dependent on those stimuli. And we see that in all kinds of addictions. You know, if you become an alcohol addict, in the beginning it doesn't take a lot of alcohol to get what you need. Whether it's totally in the dirt, drunk, can't walk, whatever it is, get a little buzz. But the more you drink, the longer you drink, the more it takes. Your body grows in immunity to it, most addictions. And that's what she's pointing out here. Same thing happens with social media. We need to see more and more and more, maybe even more severe stuff to give us the same high that we had. And this is where she says it's different. The digital world enables binging on previously unseen scale because there are no practical limitations forcing us to pause. With substances, you eventually run out of money or lines of cocaine, but Netflix shows or TikTok feeds are unending. Often you don't need to do anything. The next hit automatically loads on our screen. That's true. We don't have to do anything. And I talked about that last time. They've discovered that YouTube has discovered if they automatically play the next video, the chances of you watching it are astronomically higher. So they just do that. They just automatically play the next video. That's what he's saying here. As well as compromising our attention spans, Limbic says our obsession with instant gratification means we're constantly living in our limbic brain. And this is language that, if you were in the Conquer series at all, should ring some bells. Obsession with instant gratification means we're constantly living in our limbic brain, which processes emotions, rather than in our prefrontal cortex, which deals with future planning and problem solving and is important for personality development. Makes sense, actually. If you think about all the stuff that we see about these people that are just going spaz because they're worried about things, it says that when we're addicted to this stuff, it's our limbic brain which processes emotions. Everything's about emotions, rather than in our prefrontal cortex, which deals with the future of planning and problem solving and is important for personality development. When we're confronted with complex or unsettling issues in our work, our social lives, or our digital companions are always there to help us escape the stickiness of life with an easy distraction. And that's one of the things that is so easy to do. It's very different from life, how life used to be, when we had to tolerate a lot more distress, says Limbic. We're losing our capacity to delay gratification, solve problems, and deal with frustrations and pain in its many different forms. So there's lots of things that can happen there. So one of the things that why she would recommend that you start, and I found this interesting. I think this is true. So some of these I have to relate things. So one of the things that she points out here is, so putting that phone away for 24 hours is like a fast. It's like you're putting it away. This is why they would say to do that. It's easier to go from abstinence to moderation than from excessive consumption to moderation. Say that again. It's easier to go from abstinence to moderation than from excessive consumption to moderation. It's hard. And I had to think about that. So if I want to drink less, so this is me and my simple mind. If I want to drink less Mountain Dew, I have to totally stop and start over. I can't be drinking 3 cans a day and go down to 2. This doesn't work. But if I totally stop, say, nothing for a week, I can come back, I'll just drink 1. That's the principle here. It's a lot easier. It's almost impossible to without stopping to move, to go backwards. And so that's the idea here that she was putting forth. So some questions that I had for you, I want you to think about. Can you resist the temptation to look at your phone when you get a notification? And I so dearly wanted, again, to send all of you guys a notification about 2 seconds ago and put on there, how many of you just looked at your phone? Like, say, did you look? That would be the message that I would send out on GroupMe. And it's church. You'd be guilty because it's church. You're looking. It's much worse to look at church than anywhere else. Kidding. But anyway, just saying. How many hours of the day are you on media? How many of you, and don't raise your hands, but how many of you even know? How many of you even know how many hours a day that you are on media? So I said one of the things that I want to do is be practical. So there's some things that we can do to be practical, and it's to set time limits. Set screen time limits on your phone. Android has something called digital well-being in the settings. If you go in there, it will show you how many hours that you have been on your phone. It'll show you how many times you opened your phone. It will show you how many times you've, I don't think it shows you swipes, but it'll show you how many times you've opened your phone, which is interesting to look at that. When I've looked at it last week, I opened my phone anywhere from 35 to 65 times a day. Well, that's 35 times a day is more than once an hour. 65 times a day is, that's 20, so I'm only awake 18 hours out of the day. So 36 times is twice an hour that I open my phone. So therefore, would you say that I was distracted when I was working? If I opened my phone at minimum twice an hour, sometimes 4 times an hour. Now, I could say, well, I get lots of phone calls, but because that's one of them. If you answer a phone call, you opens your phone, but too often it's not. So look at that. You can look at that. I encourage you to do that. iPhone has an app called, I don't have an iPhone, so I'm going by some of the stuff that I've heard and looked up. iPhone has, it's called Screen Time, that will give you some of that. And we'll also, both of these will let you set reminders. And I was doing some research because of this message. I figured out some stuff. like the digital well-being on Android, it can be set so that after 15 minutes, every 5 minutes, it reminds you how long you've been on it. So if I'm on Google, looking at Fox News or whatever I'm looking at, after 15 minutes, it'll say, you've been on here now. It'll just a little flash across, stop, 15 minutes. And then at 20 minutes, it'll tell me again. It gets annoying. I don't like it. But anyway, it's good for me. It's good for me. So there's things that you can do. And this is also the screen time thing. So where I talked about that Rosenberger got his assistant to lock his phone so that he couldn't add anything without a password, that would be screen time on the iPhone. So if you have an iPhone, give it to your wife. If you have an iPhone, give it to your husband and tell him to set it up. It'll help you out. For children, there's dumb phones available. There's phones, flip phones. Guess what? I'm going to guarantee you that your child will not want a flip phone. Just giving you a heads up. They will not want a flip phone. But there are phones out there that you can buy that are, they will text. They look like a smartphone, but you can very much. And you can also, with there's parental locks. Like we use Google Family Link. We don't use it as much as we should. But we do have it on several of the phones where you can lock up, take a smartphone like this, and you can make that all they could do is answer a phone call. Like you could cut off texting, you can do whatever you want to. So Google that in Google, it's called Family Link. And you can set up all your phones to it. The only thing that I have not discovered yet is that I don't know how to lock up the parents' phone. I would like it to lock up my phone so that I can't, but so far I have not. Been able to figure that out. So what I might have to do is start another account and give somebody else access to that account to lock up my phone. But there's things like that too. For children, no phones. There's people that will not let their child have a phone. Different families do it differently. And the time limits that you put on this, I can't give you a time. That is different for everybody. Some people don't struggle with this at all. Other people's are terribly addicted. So I'm not saying how much time you should put on any of it. That is up to you. But I will say, once you come up with a number, cut it in half, and you'll probably be close to where you should be. Just saying. Turn on notifications, or turn off notifications. I don't know about you guys. Actually, this is interesting. So GroupMe drives me crazy. And I hate to say it, the all church one is the worst. I love it when somebody puts on there that they need prayer. It's wonderful. What's not wonderful is when 50 people, it is wonderful, when 50 people say that they're praying for you. It's not wonderful for my distraction time. So I turn off my notifications for church, all group me. This morning I was looking at it, I saw I had 87 messages that I had not looked at because I forget to look at it then. I probably should put a reminder on my phone to actually intentionally look at it so that I can. But in the daytime when somebody asks for prayer, I love it. I love that, and I love that we can respond. I think it's so much better than the old phone, rotary dial phone, where you call everybody or where it. I love it, but I don't like it for the distractions that it gives. So I would say if somebody puts something on, just DM them. Personal message them just for the sake of what it's worth. So turn off notifications. That can be a huge deal to stop us from being distracted. Create no phone zones. No phones in the bedroom. That's a rule in our house that it gets enforced about not right away. Usually once it gets bad, then we enforce it. It should be enforced all the time. But no phones in the bedroom. No phones during mealtime. Certain hours of the day. I don't know about you guys, but I don't like it when people answer the phone when we're sitting at the supper table. I know some people they just when the phone rings, they have to answer it. And that was another question I was going to ask that I didn't. If the phone rings, do you have to answer it? Do we have to? I mean, socially, culturally, we've been trained that you have to answer the phone when it rings. Do we really have to answer the phone when it rings? I would like to say no, but there's some people that would have an issue with that. But so create no phone zones, bedrooms, mealtimes, certain times of day. We have in our house that nobody Nobody in the house is supposed to charge their phone in the bedroom except mom, because she has the alarm that goes off in the morning for us. But nobody else is supposed to. Everybody else, dad is supposed to charge his phone out in the kitchen. All our children are supposed to charge their phone out in the kitchen. And I would say it happens about 90% of the time. Let's put it that way. But it's so easy. You want to check something, and I bring it in, and I plug it in, and now I'm tired, and I put it down. Or I need to reply to a text or something, and I'm in bed already. Anyway, last night, actually, did I? No, I told my wife. My wife asked me this morning, why is your phone on the nightstand this morning? Because I had told her that I'm putting it back out. I had gotten a bad habit. And it was this morning, because I said my alarm, I have to set my alarm for 5 o'clock because yours doesn't go till 6. So I want to get up at 5 this morning. So I had to have my phone in there. It's a good excuse. I mean, it's a great excuse. One of the things that I want to share, too, real quick, is so this week, Thursday night, so I'm feeling guilty that my phone is in. I usually put my head my phone out. I'd been doing really well having my phone in the kitchen to charge at night. About 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, it came back in. And then once it's there, it's just really hard to put it back out there. I don't know why it is. Because, you go to bed and you want to look at the news or, whatever. And then 2 hours later, you're still looking at the news. And yeah. Anyway, I put it out. I grabbed it Thursday. I think it was Thursday night. And I put it out in the kitchen. And I went back to bed and I was wide awake. I couldn't sleep. And I'm thinking about this. So I said, if I'm sleeping anyway, I'm just going to think about my day, review some things of the day, go over it, what could I have done different, what are some things that I need to face tomorrow, take care of. So meanwhile, while I'm laying there not sleeping, I figured out two solutions for a problem that I had the next day. And I don't know if I'd ever thought of those solutions if I wouldn't have actually had the time to stop and think about it. Because too often, if the phone is in there, I'm on my phone until I fall asleep. And then the next morning you get up, it's time to go to work, you go and you rush through it. But because I had time to think, I solved two problems that night. Not big issues, not big deals, but there were some things that I was thinking about at work, like, man, I wish I could do this. And I was laying there contemplating the process. I'm like, actually, I did get out of bed and went downstairs to my office to check to see if I could actually do it. Because I was like, man, if I could do that, that would save me a ton of time. And you know what? It actually worked. I could do it. So I did get out of bed and go do something. But just those things that we do. I think that's part of what we're seeing is that we don't have time to process these things. Reflect on the purpose of your social media use. How many of you have thought about that? How many of you thought about that? Why do I have social media? Why do I want it? What do I want with it? Identify why you're using social media. Is it out of habit, out of boredom, or something specific? Reflecting on your motives can help you become more mindful and reduce usage over time. So reflect on the purpose of your social media use. Delete apps from your phone. And I've talked to several people here that have struggled with something, maybe say, you know what? I've been struggling with Facebook. I just deleted it from my phone. Great thing to do. Great idea. Delete the app from your phone. And actually, the other thing, I went through my apps the other day, this week, and I deleted, I think, 10 or 15 of them that I haven't used for a long time. Just deleted them. That way, if something happens, I don't get a notification for them. Whatever you do, just delete the apps from your phone, especially if you're having issues with them. And if you really need to look at Facebook, you can use your wife's account. It works great, and you don't have to worry about it. Just side note. Track your app usage. That's one of the things I would encourage you also, is track your app usage. See how much, I'm guessing most of us don't realize how much we use our apps. And for the sake of time, we're going to go really quick here. Movies, Netflix, Amazon Prime, TV, gaming, YouTube, all kinds of things. I put on there movies, videos, long form, short form, so that I catch all of them. Gaming. There's a few things that we can do. There's no media devices in our bedroom. No TVs, nothing in our bedroom. Are you doing that? Can you do that? Some of the things that we can do. Time limits. Put time limits on it. I think we can do that on social media too. There's one guy that I know that he tried three different things to see what, and it's going to be different what works for everybody. I'm just going to say, it's going to be, what works for me will not work for you. Works for you will not work for me. There's one guy, and For some people, it will have to be like alcohol. Zero. Nothing. Because I can't handle it. Zero. No tolerance whatsoever for it. Because we can't handle it. Others will say, I don't have any problems with it. I can control it. I can control this. Some people will say, well, I can control this app, but I can't control this one. I control this, but I can't control that. We have to figure out what it is, and we have to work with it. VidAngel is something that I've heard people talk about. I have not actually ever used it myself, but it can, from what I understand, can be very helpful in taking out language, nudity, all those things. The biggest issue that I have with VidAngel, which I think it's good, I think it's a good program, as far as I know, is that how many times, because we have to take that out, should we really be watching the movie, just even if that is not in it? How many times is that? But one thing I did find out about VidAngel, it does not filter out shows produced by Warner Brothers or Disney. And that's because they were sued by Warner Brothers and Disney that it, I don't know what it was, I read the article, but they were sued about it. And another thing it does, it doesn't filter live TV shows. So if you're watching a brand new show, first time it's showing on the television, it does not filter it. So just some things to be, but it's something that you can use control some of that. And here's where I said, keep the verses we use to evaluate media visible close to the devices you use. I think that would be a great process, something that we should do, something that I would like to do, is to keep those verses that we use to evaluate media visible and close to the devices that you use. Internet and computers, same thing. Routers, we have a router at home that I really like. The name of it is called Gryphone. It lets you control almost everything. You can control whether people can connect to the internet. You can see what they've looked at. You can see all the website they've looked at. So if I connect with my phone, I can go on there and see all the websites that I've looked at through that router. You can restrict time. Like Google, one thing I like about the family link on Google about social apps is that you can give them time. So say, hey, they can have whatever the app is for 30 minutes. You can have it for 30 minutes a day, whatever it is. 25 minutes, an hour, you can set whatever, unlimited time. You can. So on Family Link, if there's all the apps that are on that phone, you can either block it, you can give it time, a certain amount of time, or you can say always available. So I like that. And that's what this router can do also for your internet capabilities. There's an accountability app that we offer as from church. It's called Covenant Eyes. If anybody wants that, you can talk to Todd Neuschwander. You can put it on your phone. You can put it on your computer. It is actually also a blocking device. I don't recommend using it as a blocking device because it basically kills your computer. Your computer works at about a quarter of the speed, but it works great as an accountability app. It looks at everything. It doesn't block anything, so don't expect it to block anything, but it will look at everything, follow everything that you're looking at, and then it will send a report once a week to whoever you choose. So you can have it, send it to you, to your wife, to me, to Todd, to accountability partner you have at church, whatever. You can send it to anybody. So you just know, and it helps me. I like it. I have that. I like it. I just know that everything that I look at on my computer, Todd's going to see it. It's going to be there. I like that. So in closing, I do believe that our draw to media is a heart issue. And I believe that Anna Lumbach said it correctly when she said that we are seeking in media is attention, validation, and distraction. I think those are the three big things that we're seeking when we're looking at media. You know, it lets us escape reality with very little work. It lets us not have to think about anything. Like if we have trouble at work and we can go home and be on the computer, the internet, phone, whatever, and just be distracted the whole night, whether it's relationships with any people in our lives, whether it's coworkers, whether it's our wives, our children, our moms, our dads, whatever, we can just zone out. It makes it so easy to do. It also helps us not have to think about our responsibilities. We don't have to think about our responsibilities. Even our responsibility to get a message ready on Sunday morning can help us just kind of get out of those, zone out, don't have to worry about our responsibilities. Anything painful in our life, in our relationship with God, I think it can really fill the void. Not in a good way. Not in a good way that it fills the void for our relationship with God, but I think it can do that. It fills a void. We try to fill a void with it for our relationship with God. We seek validation outside of God with our social media devices or our media. It covers the fact that there is no relationship with God. It can cover that fact. It fills the time so that we don't have to think or process life. I'm bored is one of the biggest things that I hear and probably one of the biggest reasons I use myself on why it's okay to justify the use of media. But the biggest issue, the biggest thing, one thing I want to say too, is all the solutions, everything we've talked about today, all the solutions that we've talked about today take time. They take effort. They don't happen by themselves. Those programs don't go in place by themselves. They take time. They take energy. They take thought. It takes trial and error, to be honest with you. It takes trial and error. It takes intentionality. Knowing what to do is not the same as doing it. Discovering that in life a little bit way too late. 50 years old, I'm discovering that. I should have discovered that at 30. That knowing the right thing to do is not the same as doing it. Just telling you that right up front, right now. Knowing it is not the same as doing it. It does not give you the same result at the end. And the biggest thing, I think, is a relationship with Jesus Christ. That's where it all starts. If we want to have victory in this, is to have a relationship with Christ. And he's given us what we need. As always, if we look at these verses that we had at the beginning, to use those to evaluate our media, we'll be in a totally different place than if we don't use those verses. So let's stand. And Brother Lynn, I think, is closing this morning.